Okay, thank you everyone for joining us. Before we get started, I want to once again thank our sponsors, Eric and Robin Ashkenazi, Lula Nishmas, Yaakov Ben Ephraim Zalman, Yoni and Etty Goldenberg, in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Yoni's father, Baruch Ben Aaron, Phil and Tamar Gross, Lula Nishmas, Phil and Tamar's grandparents, Aaron Ben Yaakov, Pesha Bas Aaron, Menachem Ben Yona, Rachaleh Bas Menachem, and Simcha Ben Tuvia, Judah and Ricky Kurtz, in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Judah's father, Shmuel ben Yamin Alter, ben Avraham HaKohen, and Leila Nishmas, Sheva Rachel Bas Menachem Aryeh, Moshe Michal Matzko, it's in honor of Dovid Bela's 14th birthday, and Matan Akiva's 10th birthday, Bracha and David Schreiber, Leila Nishmas, Elka Bas Chaim David, Nachum and Adina Schwartz, in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Nachum's father, Shimon ben Yaakov David, and Naftali and Tamar Zomberg, Leila Nishmas, David Eliezer ben Chaim Dov. Dovid Badbar Sobolovsky.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay. So we left off yesterday. We're trying to develop a yesod as to what is the nature of the heter of ochel nefesh, particularly in comparison or in contrast to the heter of pikuach nefesh in the situation of bechola. And we saw that this question really is reflects itself in the sugya of riba b'shiurim, ma b'shiurim, where Chazal almost telling us two contradictory things. That when it comes to ilchus yomtiv, so we all know that one can throw as much food into the pot. And that's perfectly acceptable. When we're dealing with pikuach nefesh issues, then we have to be very, very careful. We're not supposed to add on more than is necessary. And the question is, why is it such a discrepancy? So we saw at the end of the show yesterday, a machlokes between the Rashba and the Ran, that the Rashba's opinion is that fundamentally the two issues of halacha, two areas of halacha are really the same, that one is fundamentally permitted to be ma'abed b'shiurim, both in pikuach nefesh as well as in ochel nefesh. Once the ikar ha-isser has been become permissible, so then one can technically speak in on no matter what. Element derabbanan, Chazal were concerned, we don't want to do that. So they instituted that isser derabbanan only by Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh is in Shabbos, they're more chomer. Mashen din yontif, which is so much more lenient, it's only isser malav anyway. Therefore, there was no need to institute a chumah midrabbanan to prohibit ribbishirin. But the ikaron, in terms of pure lamdas, so the heter b'chol nefesh, heter b'pikuach nefesh, both lend themselves to the heter of ribbishirin. And the Ran began to develop a yesod for us in the eighth of the Marmakovos, where now that the two are really fundamentally different from one another. And the difference lies in the fact that Shabbos is b'pikuach nefesh and Shabbos is begeder d'chuya. But fundamentally, it is an isser of chil Shabbos. And therefore, if there's an Isser Kul Shabbos, then you can't add on anything above and beyond to what the Torah itself gives you the ability to be doiche. Whereas when you're dealing with the heter of Ochel Nefesh is in the category of Hutra. It is so permissible, it is so fine, there is so nothing wrong with cooking on Yom Kippur. It's not a Maisa Veir, it's not a Maisa Chliyot altogether. Therefore, it lends itself to Riba B'shiurim being permissible. So let's just pick it up again inside on the 8th of the Marmakamos, in the middle of the 8th of the Marmakamos. Let's pick it up from Afilu Hachi Lo Domi. It's the first word of the line is Mida Araisa. Afilu Hachi Lo Domi, about 6-7 lines down. Afilu Hachi Lo Domi. There is a difference between the two. Shah Shabbos to Chuya he ate al Chayla. The Shabbos is the Chuya for purposes of Pikuach Nefesh, not Hutra. And therefore, Chol Shah Ikar Malacha Osar Af Tosefto Kamau Umitzah Midaraisa. If the Ikar Ha'isar is problematic, even though in the end of the day we're letting you do it. But since the Iker Isser is really in place, therefore the Tosefes, the Riba B'shurim, is problematic. But after Aval Yomtiv, Ochel Nefesh, Hutaba, Ochel Nefesh is Mutter, it's Hutra, and therefore it's okay. That's the thrust of the Teretz. But in passing, the Ran drops us a line. It's going to be that line that's going to take up our attention for the most part of the Shir today. Let's just read it almost in context, and then we're going to come back to this line in a moment. And the Ran is about to prove to you that Ochel Nefesh is Hutra. He already sees that you're not going to buy into his sheet, you're not going to accept his distinction unless he can prove to you beyond the shadow of a doubt that Ochel Nefesh is Hutra. What's his proof? Says the Ran, here it is. The Afilu Efshar Me'er Yomtiv Shari. Because after all, you're allowed to cook on Yomtiv even if you could have cooked from beforehand. or so the Ran wants us to believe at this point. Says the Ran, since you could have cooked from before Yom Tov, and you don't have to, it's permissible to go ahead and cook on Yom Tov knowing full well you could have avoided it. You see, from here, says the Ran, that Ochel Nefesh must be Hutra. Because if it was Dechuya, that conclusion would never have been true. Dechuya requires of us to avoid. Dechuya requires of us to go out of our way to bend over backwards, not to do something that's a Maisa Isser. And if there's no such requirement when it comes to Ochel Nefesh, where presumably there would be such a requirement for Pikuach Nefesh, if you follow the Ran's line of thinking, what would you say about the following? If a person says, oh, I'm not going to do the procedure, it's a life-threatening procedure, a life-saving procedure. It must be done either Friday or Shabbos. I can do it on Friday. No, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Because after all, it's Pikuach Nefesh. What would you say about that? I'd say no, says the Ran. Because since Pikuach Nefesh is Dechuya, that requires of you to avoid it. Now again, push comes to shove, and you didn't get it done on Friday, so you better get it done on Shabbos because Pikuach Nefesh. But in terms of your planning, in terms of your strategy, so of course you have to avoid Pikuach Nefesh if you can. Whereas by Ochel Nefesh, there's no such halacha. And therefore, since Ochel Nefesh beyond the shadow of a doubt and the worldview of the Ran is Hutra, Kol Shu Mar Bal Iker, it's permissible. Of course, this is all assuming that it meets the criteria of Reb Bashir, namely, it's the same Torah, it's the same action. If a person wants to cook a soup for Yom Tov, and then wants to cook another soup in a different pot for tomorrow, that's not Reb Bashir, that's a separate and distinct ma'ase. And then, the Ran goes further. The Ode, Shenir Lehem L'Chachamim, She'kevan She'omra Torah, Acha She'er Ocha L'Chol Nefesh, the Torah just speaks in sweeping terms. Whatever you want to eat, kuzundei. The Torah doesn't say you have to measure and say, well, I have six people in the family and each one wants a bowl and a half of soup, and therefore if I do more than nine bowls, it's a melacha deraisa. If the Torah wanted us to do that, it would have said, be very, very wary and careful when you cook and measure every single drop and don't make one extra cookie. The Torah doesn't say that. Because the Torah says that Ochel Nefesh and Yom Tov is Hutra. Mishumachi, therefore, we b'shura kolechet lo mafesh v'tich ha'shari. About the Shabbos, she'ikar osar after sefto kamo midaraisa. And therefore, we b'shura will be a problem even on a level of deraisa. Right, it's a few more words, which is not really part of our sugya for right now. But for our purposes, we've developed the machlokes, the Rashi and the Ran. We've showed the two fundamentally different approaches to how to resolve all the three different sugyas about Reb Bashurin. And it all boils down to the fundamental question of the Chuyin Hutra. Now, of course, this goes back to our original question, because the sugya that we're really learning is, started out with Tosfos Kasha back in Pesachim, why is it that Hoil works for Ochel Nefesh and doesn't work for Chol on Shabbos? So Tosfos said, well, it's just a technicality, just a quirk, because the Cholim aren't so common. The fact that Tosfos is equating Shabbos and Yom Tov and is just focusing on a statistical distinction, a very, very technical statistical distinction, that's very much in sync with the Rashba. But fundamentally, they're the same. There is no longer Shechilik between the two Heterim. But according to the Ran, that the Kamerach and Mizrach Memayrav, one is Dechuya, one is Utra, would make a lot of sense why just because Hoil is applicable by Ochel Nefesh, that does not give us a right to use Hoil, to invoke Hoil in questions of Pikuach Nefesh. According to the Ran, that the two worlds are so fundamentally different from another, that may explain why Hoil does not make its appearance in Pikuach Nefesh. It is only something that's limited to areas of Utra. But now we have to take the sugya one step further. Even though we've solved, in a sense, we've discovered a third possibility to solve our original question of Tosfos, now we have to take the Ran to the next level. Because in passing, the Ran, almost like under the table, the Ran told you, oh, by the way, let me show you, let me prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt, how do I know that Ochel Nefesh is Hutra? What's the proof positive that Ochel Nefesh is Hutra? Is the fact that there is no such halacha that requires of you to do it mibe'od yom. Never heard of such a thing. There is no such halacha that governs Ochel Nefesh, insisting that one does the preparations if possible before Yom Tov. Is that statement agreed upon by everybody? And if not, what are the ramifications of such a machlokes? So let's take a look at the ninth of the Maramakomos. It's a, goes on to the next page, it was printed out. The ninth of the Maramakomos is actually Rashi, Masechas Beit Tzedakah of Gimel Mevayis. Rashi is addressing one of the most basic, if not the most basic question that permeates all Masechas Beit Tzedakah. There is a fundamental question that every Rishon under the sun deals with. Rashi deals with it, and Tosfos deals with it, and the Ran deals with it, and the Rambam deals with it, and the Ravi deals with it, and the Chuzi and Yerushalmi deals with it. It is such a basic fundamental question that permits the Yom HaSechta, very simple formulation of a question. On the one hand, the Torah tells us, Ach asher ochel l'chol nefesh, ochel nefesh is butter yadav. And therefore, there are Mishnayos that tell us you can cook, and you can bake, and you can carry, and you can like, so many things you can do. And yet in the same breath, we have Mishnayos upon Mishnayos, and Gemaras and Sugyas throughout Masechas Beitza that seem to put the brakes on l'chol nefesh. There is a Mishnah, that's actually what the Rashi is talking about, where the Mishnah tells us, although it's permissible to shecht an animal on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to trap an animal on Yom Tov. Seid is a malacha d'oraisa, and therefore you're not allowed to be tzad, not allowed to trap an animal on Yom Tov. But why not? If I want to eat the animal, I want to eventually shecht the animal, why can't I trap it? So I want to set up a deer trap and trap the deer, that you can't do. If you happen to have a deer in your trap already, then you're allowed to shecht it. Why? Why can't I trap animals? Isn't that also echol nefesh? The Torah doesn't say, bishul shchita hotzamot. The Torah says, achashe echol nefesh. Why is tzedah excluded? In a similar vein, Rishon discussed the beginning of Masechas Beitza, the Gemara is very, very clear that you're not allowed to be kotzer on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to harvest on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to go to your backyard and pluck an apple off your tree on Yom Tov, even though you want to eat that apple on Yom Tov itself. What in the world is the difference between cooking a raw piece of chicken, that's mutter l'chadchila. Baking a challah, that's mutter l'chadchila. And plucking an apple. I want to eat the challah, I want to eat the chicken, I want to eat the apple. Why can't I do melechas kaitzer? So why is it this phenomenon, Masechas Beit, that some melechas lend themselves to the het of echol nefesh and others don't? It's such a basic question, it's almost startling why Chazal, at least in the Talmud Bavli, don't raise the question. The Talmud Yerushalmi actually addresses the question, but the Talmud Bavli does not even address the question. And the question is, well, why not? What is the answer? It's such an obvious question. What is the answer to the question? So Rashi, at the top of the ninth of Rav Kamos, Rashi attempts to give you a solution. Rashi says, ain't sudden dog. You're not allowed to go fishing, which would be trapping fish. Afal gav, says Rashi, the shechita, you're allowed to shecht. V'yafi, you're allowed to bake. Ubish, you're allowed to cook. The avos melachos, saying there are no less melachos than sud. V'hudru l'tzorach yom tov. And they're okay. Time of mishum, the Evsha Me'erev Yantiv. You know why you're allowed to cook on Yantiv? Because you can't do it before Yantiv. Now, let's put ourselves a little bit into the mindset of pre-refrigeration days. It would be almost, if not near impossible, to actually cook a day in advance. You could not cook on Erev Yantiv. And the Shechita, the meat's going to spoil. It's not going to last. But it's going to be a hot day out, and the meat's going to be turned rotten. About Tzedah, why can't you set the fish traps from before Yom Tov? What's the problem? And if we follow Rashi's model, why can't you pluck the apple from before Yom Tov? It's Efshem B'Biod Yom. And therefore, Rashi, in effect, tells us the reason, what ultimately differentiates between the malachas that are permissible and the malachas that are prohibited, is this fact alone. Is it Efshem B'Biod Yom or not Efshem B'Biod Yom? This Rashi does not bode well for the Ran's theory, because the Ran's entire theory of proof, his proof positive that Echol Nefesh is Hutra, which gave him the ability to compare and contrast Pikuach Nefesh and Echol Nefesh, was all predicated on that one proof that he brought underneath the table by saying that, by the way, since there's no such a requirement of Efshem Mibyon, you don't have to do it before, even if you can. Araya Brura, that's a proof positive that Echol Nefesh is Hutra. Well, guess what? Nofala Yisod, Nofala Binyan. If the Ran's very foundation has a crack in it, the entire edifice is going to come tumbling down. If the Ran's entire theory was based on the proof positive that there's no need to do things beforehand, well, that doesn't seem to be what Rashi is saying. So comes the Ran in the 10th of the Maramakomos, and not surprising, the Ran disagrees strongly with Rashi. The Ran has to disagree with Rashi. The Ran has to have a different formulation to this mystery as to why certain malachas are prohibited and certain are permissible. The Ran cannot possibly go down Rashi's approach. And do not be disappointed. Not only can the Ran not, the Ran does not. The Ran is actually one of the Rosh HaMedabrim against Shittas Rashi. So let's take a look at the Ran in the 10th of the Mem Kamos. He says, V'im Sovar HaRavzal, if Rashi really meant to say, did Rashi mean what he said? That you're not allowed to trap an animal on Yomtif bin Atura because you could have easily done it before? Or the parallel being, did Rashi mean to say you're not allowed to pluck the apple off from the tree in HaTorah because you could have done it before? Really? Is that true? Lo mechuva. Can't be. It's impossible. Why? And I'll prove it to you. Says we don't find any place in Chazal that there should be any distinction between ochel nefesh, able to do before, or unable to do before. Now, of course, the Ran must say this. That's what led the Ran to have his theory about Rabbi Shuri. But says the Ran, I'm going to prove to you Rashi can't be correct. Because that very distinction that Rashi invokes, the efshar, lo efshar, does appear in the Gemara. In a different context. And from the fact that Chazal were well aware of that distinction and could have easily applied that distinction of Nefesh and deliberately did not, that gufa disproves Rashi. Where did Chazal, yes, invoke the model, the distinction between Efshar versus Lo Efshar? So the Ran makes reference to the following. What the Ran is referencing is as follows. There is a machlekes atenoim later on in Daf Kav Chesam and Beizim Maseches Beitza about what's called machshirei oichel nefesh. Machshirei oichel nefesh means I want to do malacha that is not being done to the food proper. I'm not cooking the chicken. I'm not baking the bread. I'm not shechting the animal. What I'm doing is I am, for argument's sake, rather than shechting the animal, I have to first sharpen the knife to enable me to shech the animal. Or instead of cooking the chicken soup, I have to first make a pot to enable me to cook the chicken soup. Or, instead of baking the bread, I have to first fix the crack in the oven, which will enable the oven to function properly to be able to bake the bread. Are all of those above activities mentioned, are they permissible on Yom Tov or not? So they definitely involve food, but they're one step removed from the food itself. And that's what's called the Lacha Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. So that was a Machlekes HaTanoim, what I take on that is. So the Chachamim's view was, that all of those above activities are also min HaTorah. Ochel nefesh means ochel nefesh. Ochel nefesh does not mean building an oven. Does not mean building a pot. Does not mean fixing a refrigerator. Does not mean sharpening a knife. Ochel nefesh means malacha done to the food proper. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says no. That even machshirei ochel nefesh are sometimes permissible with the following distinction, the following caveat. If the machshirin could have been done from beforehand. Namely, you knew that this knife had to be sharpened before. You knew that the pot was broken. You knew that the oven was broken, and you didn't bother doing it. Then it is actually prohibited min haTorah to do those actions on Yom Tov. However, if the knife fell to the floor now has to be sharpened. The oven just broke. The pot just broke now, and it was Iyav Shem Yibyod Yom. Then it is permissible to do those machshirin on Yom Tov. That is the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And interestingly enough, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda on this one. But everybody be very, very careful not to spread the word with what I just said. Because the Gemara says, this is the example of halacha v'ein morin kein. That even though it's true technically that we follow the view of Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore we permit machshirin, at least those she'iyav shem yibyod yom, l'maisa, we don't want to encourage people, we don't want to tell people this, because people are going to get very, very confused and it's going to be a slippery slope. Next thing they're going to do is they're going to do the machshirin that were efshar mibyod yom, which is going to be an outright issur min haTorah, even according to Rabbi Yehuda's view. So therefore, the Gemara gives us as an example, this was not a real issur d'rabbanan. It's what's called the halacha v'yom merun kein. And the Gemara actually says that if you personally know the din, you're allowed to avail yourself of this kula, but you're not supposed to be mefaris, you're not allowed to publicize it to others. The Gemara tells a story about one of the Amoraim who was sharpening his knife on Yom Tov. The knife had apparently fallen on Yom Tov, needed to be sharpened on Yom Tov. They wanted to shecht, and he was actually sharpening the knife. And one of his talmidim asked him, Rebbe, why are you sharpening the knife? So he said, no, I'm not sharpening the knife. I'm just rubbing the knife down. It got dirty. he got a whole story, a whole Megillah as to what he was doing, rather than saying outright that he was sharpening the knife. And the Gemara says the reason why he refused to answer the Talmud, because that would be a violation of this rule that Chazal laid down here, called Allah Chavi Merin Kid. This is one of those examples where Chazal said it's specifically not to be Mefar saying the Psaak, Allah Chavi Merin Kid. But I guess everyone, this is not really called a piersom. Everyone's here, Baruch Hashem, the sugi of learning, so we're not putting it, we'll put it at the Abbeid on Tinek Shul, the Abbey Allah Chavi and Merin Kid. So just between the people here in the Shir, it's you should know the din, but don't tell anybody about it. So the bottom line is, says the Ran, if the only time Chazal differentiated between Efshir and Lo Efshir in the Torah, again, we follow Rabbi Yehuda, so the only distinction we ever find between Efshir and Lo Efshir is only vis-a-vis Machshirin. The implication is obvious that vis-a-vis Echol Nefesh itself, there is no such distinction. But wait a second, if there's no such distinction, the Rashi can't be right. If there's no distinction within Echol Nefesh, we don't have any precedent in Chazal to distinguish between Efshir and Lo Efshir, except for the quirk of Machshir, which is actually based on Psukim, Ran actually references a whole series of exists at Kosovs that combine together to create this model for us of Efsha versus E-Efsha. But in the realm of real Echol Nefesh, Lo Shemana Dovzebe Yoylam, nobody ever heard, says the Ran, of doing what you're cooking Erev Yontif. Nobody ever heard of doing other things, let's say cooking, maybe cooking E-Efsha, but other kinds of things that within Echol Nefesh proper, we never heard of this. So of course, now the question becomes, well, according to the Ran, so why can't you trap your animals? According to the Ran, why can't you pluck your fruit? So it's one thing to do away with Rashi's answer. So what is the answer? So the Ran continues. The second paragraph from our Makom 10. Avala karv etzli, says the Ran, it would appear lefi gemara seinu. According to the simple reading of the Talmud Bavli, the Ran is cautious of what he said lefi gemara seinu, referring to the Bavli, because the Ran concedes that the Rishami seems to have a different approach to this. We're not going to go down the route of the Rishami right now. But the Ran claims that the Talmud Bavli's approach to the sugya is very simple. Says the Ran, the answer to the question, how can it be? How come harvesting is also? How come plucking fruit is also? How come trapping animals is also? The answer is, it's not. But at Torah, it's in fact not. But at Torah, says the Ran, there's nothing wrong with going to your backyard and plucking apple off. It can hide behind Akashi Achal Chol Nefesh. They're all awesome in the Rabbanim. So why in the world did Chazal prohibit? Why in the world did Chazal prohibit the pluck of the apples? If you're going to prohibit Echol Nefesh, then stop cooking also. If you're going to stop trapping, then stop shechting. So I understand what the Din HaTorah is, but I don't understand why the Chachamim stopped it, and if they're going to stop it, stop it entirely. So the Ran explains what the rationale was. Shechachamim asu ha-melochos ha-nasis li-yomim harbei kiktsira utchina v'chayeti behen. Any long time malachas, any malachas that are generally done for post yontif needs, those are the malachas that Chazal opposed. In the Torah, if you're going to eat this food on yontif, it's mutter to do on yontif. You're allowed to shecht on yontif, you're allowed to trap on yontif, you're allowed to cook on yontif, and you're allowed to harvest on yontif. In the Torah, it's all permissible. But those malachas that are very long-term, very un-yontiftic malachas, those malachas that are not associated with my yontif meal, but rather with a significantly long-range plan, such as harvesting's off-limits. And now the Ran concedes, v'yafla kitas peiras, hanif sadim kisusim v'anodim, even those fruit which people do not harvest long-term, people harvest the berries and the grapes, things that people want to eat right now. Most harvesting, most plucking is for long term. Even once in a blue moon, you find your fruit that's going to get spoiled after a few hours. Even though the low plug, the chumra midrabban, and you can't harvest cultures off limits, albeit midrabban. So the Ran has disagreed with Rashi. Unlike Rashi, who says Efshalo Efshir is a distinction in the Torah, the Ran says that doesn't exist at all. Maybe in the Ram Achshirim, but for sure not in the Ram Vachon Efesh. And Baruch Hashem, because the Ran disagreed with Rashi, he is able to keep to his position, his ultimate proof that Pekuach Nefesh, that Ochon Nefesh is Hotra, his absolute ironclad proof that Ochel Nefesh is Hotra, because after all, you're allowed to do it even if you could have done it before. It's an ironclad proof if you believe those facts are right. If you believe like Rashi, that it's just not true, that in Ochinami, what you could have done before, you may be required to do before. And according to Rashi, a true, almost like the elephant in the room, according to Rashi, and what if I could have cooked before? Maybe I have to do that. Now, Chazal couldn't have dreamt of that because in the days of Chazal, it was inconceivable to cook before and have the food still be edible by the next day. It would spoil. But the facts have changed on the ground. It's called refrigeration. Could one argue that according to Rashi, if one cooks on Yom Tov today, maybe that's usur because you could have cooked yesterday. So what right do you have to cook today if you could have cooked yesterday and just put it into the fridge? So there are some Rabbanim who say the answer to that question is in Hachinami. You shouldn't be cooking on Yom Tov because of that very real concern. This is Rashi. And many others say, and I think the Minhag Olam is pretty clear this way, that no, that's not called Efshir B'Yod Yom. I'll tell you what. The Ramah writes that Efshir means not only could you have done it, but it would be of the same quality if you did it yesterday as you did it today. Now, I'm sure that our wives are phenomenal cooks. And you know, Chinam, I know it's true that every once in a while they may cook things in advance and maybe put it into the fridge or maybe put it even into the freezer and take it out a couple of weeks later. We all have been through, continue to be through that phenomena. But I think we all know without, not that we should become picky eaters, not that we should become people who insist on fresh food every single night. I think we all will concede that a good fresh meal right out of the oven is a little bit tastier than the 3 days later Shabbos leftovers. So, again, I'm not advocating to be insistent on that, but the bottom line is, I think we could say with a straight face that it's according to many, and the Minhag Olam is, you could still cook on Yom Tov Bizman Hazeh, because it's still not Efshir B'Yod Yom. It's Efshir, but that's not called Efshir. Efshir means it has to be 100% Efshir with no deterioration whatsoever. But I think the bottom line is a good fresh piece of schnitzel, for argument's sake, is still better than yesterday's schnitzel that's been sitting in the fridge for overnight. So well, we can still breathe a sigh of relief. Our wives can still continue to cook on Yom Tov, even in the world of Rashi of Efshir. So, Rabosai, we've now seen almost like several sugyas that are converging together. We started off with the sugya of Ha'il, that took us quickly to the sugya of Ribi Mishirin, which in turn has taken us to the world of Rashi and the Ran. How do you know which malachas are permissible and other which are prohibited? The three sugyas are theoretically separate sugyas, but they're all clearly interrelated and the pieces are clearly interlocked. And now we're about to embark upon a fourth sugya that is also going to relate to so many of the things we spoke about. It's going to touch on the Dechuyah Hutra. It's going to touch on which malachas are really awesome in a Torah and Yantav, which are not. It's going to touch on Ho'el. Every single nuance of what we've been talking about are now going to converge together. How do you deal with the sugya that appears in the 11th of the Ramakamos? That's the Gemara Masechah Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Hamid Aleph. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa in Masechah Shabbos, 11th of the Ramakamos, Haroda Chalos Dvash. If a person pulls a honey out of the honeycombs on Shabbos. Again, I don't know too much about the bees and the honeycombs, but suffice it to say, somewhere in the beehives, so they have these almost like little cakes, like this chalos they're called, a little, you know, the full blocks of the honey. And if a person wants to remove some of the honey from the beehive, that's what's called roda chalos drash. So if a person does it on Shabbos, one of the ramifications of this, so chayv chatas. That's called the malacha d'oraisa. We don't know why yet, but hezid b'yomtiv, if you did a similar thing on yomtiv, like Arboy, you would be Chayav Malkus. Now, what we basically just said is that this is clearly an Issa D'oraisa, and therefore it's also B'nai Torah. Yishabes, also B'nai Torah, Yom Tov, Divi Rabbi Eliezer. The Chacham is saying, no, it's not true. Although it's prohibited to do this both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it is only prohibited in the Rabbanan. So the Gemara goes on a little bit further down. Let's skip down to three lines from the end of this Mar Makom. Amar Rabbi Elazar, my time with Rabbi Eliezer. Why did Rabbi Eliezer say this is also in a Torah? Which of the 39 malachas is involved removing honey from a honeycomb? Dechsev by Yitbol or Sabiyaros Hadvash. It's a pasuk that says for Shmuel, the story of Yonas and Shaul, where the pasuk refers to honeycomb with a very, very strange phrase. It calls them the Yaros Dvash. Rabbi Yonasan Abishitz, of course, his name is Yonasan, and the story happened to Yonasan and Shaul. One of his farms is called Yaros Dvash for this very reason. So the pasuk says that Yonasan went and he dipped his stick into the Yaros Advash and he took a little bit of Advash to eat. And Chazal is sensitive to the phrase Yaros Advash, the rather bizarre phrase. Yar means a forest. A forest means trees, things that are growing in the ground. Dvash doesn't grow in the ground. The dvash, the honey, is inside the beehive that may be sitting on the tree, but it's not really part of the yar. Why the comparison? What's the connection between the forest, between the trees, and the honey? To teach me, just as a ya'ar, if you detach wood from the forest, that's called kaitza, yechayev and isidiraisa. So too, the person who removes some of the honey on Shabbos will be chayev chatas as well. That is the background for the view of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, truth to be told, we happen to not even follow the view of Rabbi Eliezer. We happen to hold like the Chachamim, who did not accept this drasha, who did not derive anything. This phrase does not have any halachic meaning whatsoever, according to the Chachamim. And therefore, a person who removes honey from the honeycomb will not be over in a seder aisa. The Chachamim can see that it's prohibited with the Rabbanan, and the reason being, because it probably looks a little bit like kaitza. After all, very often the beehives are on the trees, in the trees, whatever. Again, I'm not the bucking beehives right now, but it gives almost like that impression that the honey is almost like kind of growing inside the beehive. So it gives a little bit, it almost looks like plucking an apple off a tree. Again, not minotaur, but at least with the rabbon. So the bottom line is, if you have the guts to go to the beehives and you want to go dress yourself up like the beekeepers and take out some of the honey for the chazdash, don't do it on Shabbos. According to Belezi, you're risking this is skila. According to Chachamim, all you're doing is an isser the rabbanan. But the Shabbos piece of this picture is not the part that interests us the most at this point. Who is the second half of Rabbi Eliezer's statement? We go back again to the first line of the 11th Rambam Kamos. Hezid the yontif like Erban. If you did this on yontif, then you chayev malchus. But that's a startling statement, because what does that mean? You did it on yontif, therefore you chayev malchus. Well, if we use the phrase lo karbon, that is a catchphrase for Nisa Deraisa. So basically, what the Gemara is telling us is that what you just did was asav in Atar, and not just on Shabbos, but on Yontif also. Now, we know this statement was said by Rabbi Eliezer. And we know, based on the end of the Gemara, that the Amora Rabbi Elazar told us that the reason for the Tana Rabbi Eliezer's Shita was based on the notion of Kotzer. The bottom line is, it's part of Melechus Kotzer. Well, if it's part of Melechus Kotzer, so what Rabbi Eliezer is basically saying, which is simply connect the dots, is that Kotzer is prohibited on Yontif. Now, I know that already, because the Gemara says it in Beit Nav Gimel. But no, Rabbi Eliezer is saying more than that. Rabbi Eliezer is saying, Kotzer is prohibited on Yontif min ha-Torah. Because if you're Chayav Malchus for it, and Chayav Malchus is a catchphrase for Issa deraisa. If it's asa deraisa, and the isser involved, the isser in question is kosher, it's the only isser that we know of. So that, if you connect the dots, so that it's tantamount the same, kosher and yantav is asa in a Torah. Now that is a loaded statement, because we are not so sure that that is true. After all, we just saw that may very well be a machlokes sarishanim. That may very well be a machlokes Rashi in the Ran. Now Rashi may have held that kosher is asa in a Torah because it's efshem and beyond yom. But the Ran didn't say that. The Ran would hold that being kotzer and yontif can never be more than a derabanan, because kotzer is one of the malachos that are permissible. So we have a big challenge now. We have a big problem. In light of the machlokes of Rashi and the Ran, which is a critical machlokes, because the Ran Shita was the background for the Ran's theory that Echol Nefesh is Hutra, which in turn was part of the Ran's theory that Rebbe Shurd on Yontif is Mutter, which in turn is enabling us to answer Tosa's original question about the difference between Hoel, Bekikov Nevesh, and Echol Nevesh. Everything is hinging on the previous piece of argument. Wait a second, we have our entire house is going to come collapsing down. This is going to have a domino effect here. Because if this Gemara doesn't seem to be correct in the world of the Ran, and that cannot be, the Gemara has to be correct, we're going to have to reject the Ran. If we have to reject the Ran in light of the fact that the Gemara says Pemole, the Yechai Malkus, which is tantamount to saying Deraisa, if the Ran is rejected, then the Ran's entire theory of Tuchun Hutra is rejected. If the Ran's entire theory of Tuchun Hutra is rejected, then his entire, the potential answer to explain the discrepancy between Hol by Ochel Nefesh and not Bruch Nefesh is going to fall by the wayside as well. So all of a sudden we realize, as we said already in the past, that we're running an experiment here. We're in the laboratory here, and the laboratory is Shas. And we have to look at every single Gemara through the eyes, literally under the microscope, and check, is this Gemara disproving that theory? Is this Gemara disproving the Ran's theory? At first glance, it seems to be disproving the Ran, because it speaks about the Basilil Malkus, knowing full well that the only Malacha on the table here is Kotzer. So we have a lot of work yet to do. We don't have so much time left to do it. So from Mitzvah tomorrow night, we'll try to understand the Shittas Ran in light of this Sugya. And hopefully, by doing so, we'll open up our eyes and almost put many, many pieces of the puzzle together. And perhaps, hopefully, we'll be able to complete the circle in terms of understanding these very, very different issues and very, very different pictures of some of these sodos that make up Ochol Nefesh and, by extension, some of these sodos that make up Pikuach Nefesh as well. So we're going to pick up now in the Chelek HaMachshava, where we left off for last night. So last night, we began with a very, very piercing words of introduction of Reb Chaim Oizer into his Shas HaTshuvas Achiezer. And just to quickly put us back into the spirit of things, Reb Chaim Oizer, on the one hand, was bemoaning the terrible fate of the Jewish people post-World War I, a world where Jewish communities had been uprooted, a world where yeshivas were having very, very great difficulty being able to resettle. There was terrible economic hardships. The Soviet Union had already been put into place with terrible decrees that were already making life for millions of Jews unbearable. And Reb Chaim Oizer was writing Shas HaTshuvas about Lomdei Shasugyos and Shas and Poskim. And he posed the question to himself, why am I doing what I'm doing? Is this the appropriate thing to do? And he answered with a resounding yes. Not only is it appropriate, this has been the traditional response from day one. This was the response of the Jews at the time of the Churban. This has always been the response of Klal Yisrael, knowing that our only life and our only light and our only hope lies within the world of Torah. So let's continue from the second paragraph. I made a mark on my paper we're up to, where it's five lines from the beginning of the second paragraph, three words from the end, where Reb Chaim Oizer was always taking us to a little bit of a quick trip through Jewish history. So he said, at the time of the Churban, so Torah traveled to Yavne, and then it spread throughout the different places of the Golos. And he continues, Al Yedei Rabbi Seinu, three words from the end of the fifth line of the second paragraph. Yedei Rabbi Seinu, Shebe Eretz Yisrael, Shebe Babel, through our Rabbonim, our great and Chomet Eretz Yisrael and Babel, Nechtemu HaTamudim HaMishnah V'Gemara. Everything that we have at Teshuva Pet today was sealed. The Mishnayos were completed. The Gemaras, both Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi. And listen to the way, to the love of the words that Reb Chaim Oizer describes, the words of the Talmud, the words of the Gemara, the words that we spend our entire days on. We part of this Messiah, we who just spent 45 minutes learning through the Sugyas, we're reading through, how did the Ran learn this Gemara? And we had to read this Gemara together. And how did Rashi read this Gemara? We had to read the Gemara together. And everything we've been doing to figure out, Yireh Chazal say one thing, and Yireh Chazal say something else. What's the answer? Is it a Machlekes? Is it a Tudinim? Is it a Tuvalachas? Is it a Tchui? Everything we do, Yayim V'Layla, all the learning, all the Minotaur that we do, whether we do it Pekiyos, through our Daf Yayim, we do it Be'im, through our Shiurim. Listen to how Reb Chaim Oizer describes what the words of the holy, holy Gemara are. Ashibahem, Atsurim, in the words of the Mishnah and the Gemara, Pa'abab and Rishami, the treasures, Kol Moreshes, Avos, Yisodei HaTorah, V'Das Rachel. The entire heritage of the foundations of the Torah and the way to understand it, everything is found in these words of Tesha Bapeh. This is almost a paraphrasing of the Rambam, when the Rambam in his introduction to Mishnah Torah describes of the Meishik Yivotar Messinai, the days that are right upon us of Shavuos, Bazman Torah Seinu. And the Rambam says the whole Torah that was given to Meishik Rabbeinu is now found, has found its resting place in the pages of Brachas Abeis to the last Daf Maseches Nida. That is Chochmas HaTorah. Everything is there. We just said a moment ago, we call the lab the laboratory. A Rishon says something, you got to prove it in the lab. The laboratory is Shas. The laboratory is Chazal. The laboratory are the words of Bavli and Rishalmi and the Mishnayis and the Braises and the Tesefters. That's the Kol Otsos HaTorah. All the treasure house, that is the treasure house of Torah. And that's Moshe Kibbutz Torah Messina. Rambam goes so far as to say that if a person undermines that belief and doesn't subscribe to that notion that Kol Chochmas HaTorah is found in the words of the Talmud, so ain't no chelik b'teres Moshe. the tent about to be a tzeduki, and a pikiris, a koifer, a kol, koifer b'toira. We have no, he has no stake in anything related to Torah of Kadosh Baruch Hu. He has no connection whatsoever to his mom, not that they're saying. This down where Chaim Isaac continues. The beauty, Sham or Zarua, that's where the light is planted. The Kokoich Bezoyar, the stars that give off light. Sham Koruach Yisrael Yigadl Nafshay. That's where a Jewish soul grows. He draws his nourishment from the words of the Torah HaKadosh, the words of the Talmud. The Cholmokom Shaholach Yisrael Emakel Nodidim. No matter where a Jew traveled, but listen to the imagery, the picture. Havaf Abdullah, this could have been a poem. He says, where a Jew has traveled throughout the years of exile, he doesn't just say where a Jew is exiled, where a Jew has traveled with walking with his walking stick, with his cane, the makom neidedim, it's a person who needs assistance, he can't stand his own 2 feet. That's the imagery of the Jewish people couldn't survive, they bekoshi, like sometimes like an elderly person can't, needs that extra support. And Chazal schlepsuch and schlepsuch and schlepsuch for 2,000 years, komokom shagola, wherever they exiled, shechina imo, the divine presence was with him. V'shem heichin mishkan olalom ha-tayr. That the Torah was set, the Mishkan was set for Limud HaTorah. Umiyomi Golos Yisrael Me'artzo, and from the day that the Jewish people left their land thousands of years ago, Hashel Shelas Aruchem Eretz Midah, that chain that is longer than the earth itself, Aydei Ge'onim HaMevarim HaPoiskim HaRishenim VeHacharonim. He said, all the Gedolei Rishonim, from the Rashi to the Tezum to the Rambam to the Rashbas to the Ran, the Ramban, the Chul, to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Ramah, to the Shach, the Taz, from the Kiddush, some Seifer, from the Goya, Mishtabura, Ramesha, the Rav. Today, to you, each and every one of you, each and every one of you who opens up a Gemara, who participates in a Shir, who thinks to the Kasha, thinks to the Teretz, you're part of that Shalshelas, which is Aruch HaMeretz Midah. And then, even in the days of great destruction, Hagezeros, Haradifos, Fatultulim, the days of decrees and the days of pursuings and the days of exiles, Omlum and Mesiris Nefesh, the Jewish people have always risen to the occasion, Lahachin Machon Torah, to create a place for Torah, Ubon Nivne, Al Yodom, Hambinyan Ha'atik, Laturis Yisrael. They have created the giant structure of Torah. And they have created the model for each and every generation to add on to that model, to continue the greatness of Torah. And Chaim Ozer makes reference to the famous famous mashal. Ha'anakim ha'gidolim alolu hinichu es hananasim lalos akisfeim. The great giants of old, the Rashi that we just read, the Rashi read Kol HaTorah in front of his very eyes. The Ran we just read Kol HaTorah in front of his very eyes. The Rashba we spoke about yesterday, Kol HaTorah in front of his very eyes. The giants of spirit and the greatest Nachachom throughout the years allow us to climb on their shoulders, like the famous Moshe of the midget on the shoulders of giants. We may be midgets, but when we stand on the shoulders of giants, we can see so much further. This is what we've been doing, and this is what we continue to do. L'chazik b'chol dor v'dor es ha-binyan ha-niskav ha-nedar b'kodesh, to strengthen this edifice of beauty, of glory, of grandeur, of holiness, an edifice and a structure that can never be destroyed. Asher kol kli yutzar alav lo yutzlach. It's a quote right out of a pasuk of Yeshayahu, kol kli yutzar alach lo yutzlach. No kli, no instrument, no weapon can ever destroy it. Lashbisa mitaro can ever destroy the purity of the Torah Kedosha. So Chaim Ozer says that's our answer to why I'm writing a sefer, says Chaim Ozer, because that is the only answer. That is the only thing to keep the Jewish people alive. In difficult times and in good times, if Klal Yisrael don't excel in Limud HaTorah, and by extension, of course, the Shmiras HaMitzvos. Limud HaTorah is not a goal. It's not a goal only. It is a goal together. The Talmud of the Ma'aseh said is that dual goal of Limud HaTorah and Shmiras HaMitzvos that we celebrate in Kabbalah Torah, the Naaseh and the Nishma. That is our answer to all of our trials and tribulations throughout the years. And yes, says Reb Chaim Weizer, in the difficulties following the World War I, the terrible difficulties of Klal Yisrael, that was the time to rebuild Torah. So we're going to stop for here in terms of our machshava. I guess I may not have calculated properly how much time we need for machshava, because I thought we would finish this piece of Chaim Weizer tonight, and then hopefully from tomorrow night, you know, look at the Rambam, go to a different world, a world of last two Makaris and Gemini was a world of the Meshachach Chaim Weizer, a world of, we took you to the world of Europe in the 1920s, and I wanted to take you now back to the world of Egypt, back to the 1100s. So I think what we'll try to do is as follows. Tomorrow night, Mitzvah, we'll have the regular Shir and Halacha part from the 9:15 till approximately 10 to 10 or so. And then we'll try to finish up the part about Reb Chaim Weizer, because there's something so profound that Reb Chaim Weizer says that speaks to us, because Reb Chaim Weizer speaks about America. He talks to you and I in the end of his piece. He was primarily, most of the people who are probably reading Shulchan Aruch at the time are probably in Europe, but he does make reference to the Jewish community of America in the 1920s, almost in a prophetic manner, as to what their role was going to be in terms of the Shalshalas of Torah. Words that were written close to 100 years ago are ringing true until this very day. So I don't want to lose that historical and personal perspective. So we'll take a little bit of time to finish up the Reb Chaim Moses piece tomorrow. And then, Amir Hashem, I want to be able to spend a little bit of time in the Rambam as well. So I guess the quote from earlier this year, we may end up being Mavi B'Shurim. So I'm not sure at what time the Shia is going to end tomorrow night, but don't worry, it won't go too late. And after Rachmanis helps your wives get some of the cheesecakes rolling tomorrow night. So, but again, we'll start at 9:15. And if we go 2-3 minutes later than we expected, I hope everyone will be mindful tomorrow night. So we'll see where it takes us. And hopefully, Mitzvah Shem will be back on for the fourth and of this series, Mitzvah Shem tomorrow night. A good night, everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Take care and be well. Be well, everyone. For some reason, the recording's been stopping on that.